When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Profoundly Pointless Podcast. My name is Nick. Coming up on this episode, we have an interesting mix of things that don't really seem like they should go together.
But he was just laying there in his casket. He was solemn. He was peaceful. And he looked at peace. And I just thought, wow, that was fascinating. I thought it was funny when I wrote it. And I ran it by a couple of people. I tried it at an open mic. And they turned on me really fast.
They were going to rush the stage on you?
Here's the million-dollar question is, what kind of bear would it be?
I'm going to go top three. I would go, if I'm going to get mauled by a bear, I'm going to go grizzly bear number one, polar bear number two.
See, I would rather, like, to make it just a true news story, like, give me, like, a koala bear.
I want to thank you guys so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. Our first guest is somebody that I found while I was scrolling through Twitter, and I saw this person and just thought, we have to talk to them. We have to talk to them and find out how they got into both of these professions. This is Morty the Mortician, who is a mortician, still practicing, and is also just really getting going on a stand-up comedy career.
How does somebody become a mortician and a stand-up comedian?
Well, the mortician part kind of came unexpectedly. It's something that I wanted to do since I was a little kid. And as I got older, I did other jobs, but I always kind of been in the funeral industry. And eventually, it kind of snowballed from there. The stand-up comedy, that's a little bit different. That's something that I never, ever, ever wanted to do. Kind of got into that by chance and kind of almost by accident.
I guess when I anticipated talking to you, I kind of thought that would be the reverse, that the comedy was something you always wanted to do and the mortician thing was something you fell into.
Just almost the exact opposite, Nick.
As a kid, how does one dream of being a mortician? That's not necessarily something you usually hear.
That's true. When I was 7 years old, there was kind of an incident that happened in our neighborhood that kind of impacted me. And for most people, funerals, traumatic experience, traumatic deaths kind of have a negative impact on things and on people. For me, it was just the exact opposite, because even though it was such a traumatic experience for people that were involved, the funeral home that took care of the deceased made it a good experience, a positive experience. And I was just kind of really fascinated by that.
What was the tragic event that happened?
My dad was a doctor, and when he was in charge of the county hospital back then, the county hospital was just a two-room emergency room behind the police department. So he was a sworn police officer, had a gun and a badge. All the people, officers, detectives, everybody knew my dad in that realm. One of my neighbors, who was a police detective, called my dad and said that he had actually just shot and killed his wife and was going to kill himself. My dad hung up the phone, went down the street, and, yeah, he carried out his actions. I didn't know anything about this for several days later, but when we went to the funeral home to pay our respects and visit, do the visitation and the viewing, on the way there, my parents kind of explained everything. And as we were at the funeral home and as I looked in and saw him, I was kind of thinking in the back of my head about this awful thing that he did to himself and to his wife, but he was just laying there in his casket. He was solemn. He was peaceful, and he looked at peace, and I just thought, wow, that was fascinating. I mean, that wasn't what I was expecting, but I thought it was a pretty unique and positive experience for the family members.
How did you become a mortician?
I had actually worked other jobs, but one of the jobs I did was a paramedic. We worked 24-hour shifts, so I actually had 5 days a week off. I worked 2 days a week. And one of the guys that I worked with actually worked part-time for the coroner's office doing coroner body removals on his day off. And so he got me a job doing that. And so I worked for the coroner for a couple of years, and then me and another guy who I worked with actually decided to quit and go to mortuary school to get licensed and get our degrees and work in the funeral industry.
How did the comedy thing get started then?
Being a mortician and running my own funeral home, I always get asked to do public speaking. Church groups, civic groups, different organizations come to ask me to speak to their groups about funeral planning, different aspects of the funeral industry. And when I first started doing it, I would always ask the people how many people were actually freaked out when they found out a mortician was going to be there. And somebody would always raise their hands. And I know it's a topic people don't want to talk about. So as I started doing more of it, I started making my talks educational, informative, but I would inject a little bit of humor in it to kind of make them at ease and let them know that I wasn't your stereotypical mortician. I was just kind of a regular guy. After one of my talks, a lady came up to me and said, "Hey, you're actually kind of funny. Have you ever thought about doing stand-up?" And I said, "No, it's something I've never really wanted to do. I just kind of do a little bit of humor just to kind of lighten the mood," and kind of left it at that. But one of the topics that I do, I wanted to write a book, because normally when I speak to groups, I usually get 10, 15 minutes, but I wanted to expand on some of the different topics, so I started writing a book. And as I wrote the book, it kind of started turning into a joke writing session. I have a really good friend of mine that owns a comedy club. I told him the story, and I said, "Hey, do you have an open mic night that I can come and try out a couple of these jokes?" And he said, "No," but he did have a stand-up comedy class. So I ended up taking the class. It's 2 weeks. You learn all the ins and outs about stand-up, and then at the end of the class, you invite all your family and friends for your graduation performance. And it kind of snowballed from there.
That first time on stage, how did it go?
I thought it went really well. I got a lot of laughs, and it was unique. It was a lot of fun. I wasn't really nervous, because for me, I'm more comfortable when I know people in the audience. I know a lot of comedians that say that they would rather perform on stage in front of a crowd that they did not know. Me, it was just the exact opposite. So I kind of killed it, so to speak.
I feel like does mortuary industry lend itself to comedy more than other industries do?
I think so. I think there's a lot of topics, a lot of mystique. And so most of the stories that I tell on stage are based on true actual stories of things that have happened in the 35 years that I've been doing this.
What are some of those stories? Like, what are a couple of the best ones?
How some of the things that we do behind the scenes. I used to work with this one guy that we were talking about the zombie apocalypse one day. And so he actually started dressing people and tying their shoelaces together and placing them in their casket.
Are you at a point where you have to choose between one or the other, or are you still kind of moving forward?
I'm really pursuing the comedy. At my age, I'm looking to retire in about 4 years from owning my funeral home and being a mortician. And one of the goals that I want to do is when I retire is get an RV and kind of travel around a little bit. But as I do in my travels, I'd like to do some stand-up. I actually really enjoy it, and I meet a lot of people, and it's a lot of fun. And it's just kind of something I want to kind of pursue a little bit more.
When you do the mortuary stuff, Like, walk me through that. What do you have to do? Somebody just brings in the... I think a lot of people know about it, but they don't know about how this really works.
It usually starts with a phone call, somebody calling in and reporting a death, and we get all the information. It's either from hospice or the hospital or from the family, wherever the person passes away from. And then we dispatch a transportation team that goes and picks up the decedent, brings them into our care. We meet with the family and make all the necessary arrangements, whether it's going to be a cremation or a burial. We talk about all their different options and kind of proceed from there with all the different options on the disposition that they choose and for what's best for them and their family.
Are you the one that does the kind of getting the body ready?
I do a lot of it. Since I kind of own my own funeral home now, I kind of delegate a lot of that. But I still meet with families. That's one of the things that I really love to do the most. But a lot of the embalming, the cosmetic work, I kind of refer that out.
But when you've done that in the past, is that, I would imagine the first time, is that a weird experience?
I never thought it was weird. It was kind of, it's different, and it's not for everybody, but kind of growing up, being kind of around it a little bit, it kind of came naturally to me. I've always, with my dad being a doctor, I've always had a really strong sense of anatomy, biology, how the body works. And I've always thought that the human body was fascinating, and I still do.
Have you ever had somebody come in just really bad condition?
Oh, yeah. It happens.
What do you have to do in that regard?
Usually you have to kind of explain the conditions in kind of layman's terms to the family and give them their options that they want to do.
People die. Sometimes it's obviously a very violent thing. Can you make that look normal, or how do you do that?
We try to make the deceit. If they want to see their loved one, we try to do our best to make them presentable and do our best so they can have, you know, a positive experience with it. Sometimes, you know, because of the manner of death, it's not feasible, so we explain that option to them.
How long have you been doing comedy?
Oh, not very long at all, Nick. I'm thinking we're coming up on about 2 years.
Are you starting to kind of get, would you say, established, or is that not happened yet, or did that happen a long time ago?
I'm slowly but surely getting established and getting booked more. In the beginning, I did a lot of open mics. I still do a lot of open mics because I write comedy. I try and write every single day. Some things that I know that's going to work, some things I know may not work, but I can always kind of tweak things a little bit. But once I have a premise and an idea of a story, I'll take it to an open mic and kind of work on it. I videotape all my performances, my open mics, so I can kind of gauge how it's working, how it's not working, and how I can kind of tweak it a little bit.
Does being the mortician, do you think that opens people up a little bit more, like, oh, this is going to be good? Or do you think that tunes people out, like, okay, how funny could this guy possibly be?
In the beginning, it was actually, people were fascinated because there was nobody like me doing what I do and doing it on a stage in front of people. As I started doing it more and I started writing more material and getting more stage time and telling more jokes and more stories, I kind of got an inclination that people were kind of starting to get a little uneasy about it. So now not only do I do a lot of jokes and stories about my day job, I also do other types of material to observational material. I inject, you know, stories about my family, me being Jewish, and, you know, my relationships. And so I probably have to say right now a little bit more than, maybe even a little bit less than half of my material is death related.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it could be a kind of a shtick to get you in the door, but then you have to drift away from it a little bit.
Exactly, especially as you grow and you become a better comedian, you kind of got to, your material has to grow with you.
What is the best joke that you feel like you've ever written? One that really you thought was good, that you go in front of the audience and it just does nothing?
I have one joke that my wife absolutely hates, And every time I do it, it gets a lot of laughs and people love it. They think it's a great joke. And my wife every time says, I just don't get it. I don't know what they see in that joke.
Well, now you got to tell us the joke.
Okay. It's kind of hard to do it over a podcast with no audience. Basically, the joke is I was reading an article about these scientists who had did these experiments on these dying hospice patients. One of the conclusions that they came up with was when you die, your brain continues to function for 10 minutes after death. And so when I read that, I kind of thought it was fascinating because that means when you die, you may not even know that you're dead, right? Well, that's kind of the same thing as when you're stupid.
Yeah, it really is when you think about it. What is your general kind of humor? Are you more of a dry kind of humor guy? Are you more action-oriented? I don't know what other phrases to necessarily use.
Most of my comedy, I kind of describe it as a comedic perspective on death, funerals, and life as a Jewish mortician.
I would imagine that that is a very unique perspective in the comedy world.
It is, just because of who I am and what I do, there's really nobody I've ever met and people that I've talked with and other comedians think it's kind of a unique shtick.
For somebody who's from the outside of it looking in, I mean, I just feel like, is being a mortician depressing?
It can be if you let it be, if you kind of let it. What I kind of do is I kind of try and, I'm obviously really sympathetic and empathetic with my families that I serve, but I try to make the experience positive and try to walk them through the process. And I don't try to get really emotionally attached to the families because you'll burn out and they'll make the job even harder. But I just try to kind of walk them through the process and make the experience, easy for them and help them get through one of the most difficult days of their life.
Have you ever really messed something up? I'm just throwing out an example, like you put the wrong body in the wrong casket or anything like that.
Never. Never.
I would imagine you have to be kind of perfect all the time.
There's a lot of safeguards and a lot of identification processes and steps and protocols and things that we go through to make sure these mistakes never, ever, ever happen.
What is your best mortician joke?
That's a tough one. I've got so many jokes that I do, but I think one of my favorite ones is I talk about growing up as a kid, and one of the things that I really hated as a kid was going to these big family weddings because I have a big family. But one of the reasons I hated going to the big family weddings because at the reception, my mom, my grandma Lola, other grandmotherly types would come up, they'd grab my cheek and go, oh, you're next. So one day I kind of came up with a surefire way to get them to stop doing that. Started doing it to them at funerals.
Is that when you're a mortician, when you go out in like public and social circles, do people treat you differently at all?
It's weird, Nick, because, you know, being established in the community and going to different chamber events, and when I meet people for the very first time and when they find out that I'm a mortician, they're either really freaked out or they're fascinated. There's really no in between.
What? I don't get the freaked out thing. I mean, in the sense it's like somebody's got to do this job. Why are people freaked out about it?
Because death is such a taboo topic. Some people just don't want to talk about it or deal with it. And I get it.
I mean, why? I look at some of those things and, you know, something that I hear from a lot of people when they're young is like, I'm not going to do this. Just give me a regular pine box. Why is some of that stuff so expensive?
Well, it kind of depends on what expenses. I mean, there's caskets that run $10,000 on it, not because they're solid copper bronze caskets, but of course you can get a real simple, like you said, a pine box or a cloth-covered casket that's actually really useful and economical and affordable.
How long do you, I mean, for the comedy stuff, when you go out there, are you still even nervous at this point?
Oh, yeah. I still get nervous, but once I get up there and I do my opening joke and I get that first laugh, I can kind of settle in a little bit. and I kind of have a flow to it. I kind of plan ahead, so I kind of know what I'm going to do, what not jokes I'm not going to do. If I get a really poor response on a joke that I know always works, I got a whole bunch of jokes in my back pocket, so to speak, that I can use. So I've kind of got a game plan, but I've also got a plan B in case it doesn't go according to plan, because a lot of audiences are different.
I would imagine you have to kind of really read that audience as you're going through it.
I do. I kind of gauge the audience, and then before the shows, I always kind of look around to see the type of audiences that are there. There's one club here in Sacramento that tends to get a lot of really a younger crowd, and I've done a few shows there, and I just do not do well in that room.
Do you kind of know as you're walking in, like, this is not my audience?
I can. I'm at that point now that I know it's going to be a tough night or it's going to be a great night.
Do you, and if you know it's going to be a tough night, do you ever feel like just, I'm not doing this today?
If I'm booked on a show, I owe it to the promoters, the people that booked me, to the club owners, that I'm going to go up there and I'm going to give it 110%. I'm going to do my thing. Sometimes, yeah, it just doesn't work, but you know, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to try my hardest to try to win this crowd over. Sometimes it just doesn't work.
That first time that you kind of bombed, what is that like?
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. But actually, when I took the comedy class, the gentleman that taught the class has been a veteran comic for over 20 years, and he always told us that the very first time you get on stage and you bomb, embrace it and learn from it. So I was actually kind of looking forward to my first bombing experience so I can kind of get it out of the way.
Can I make a bad mortician comedian joke?
Sure.
Could you call it embalming when you don't do well? Yes.
I guess that would be the perfect word for it.
Listen, I'm going to go ahead and give that to you for free if you want it.
I'm going to write that down, Nick. Thank you.
That's probably the best mortician comedian joke I've ever come up with. What is that like then in your kind of daily life when people know you as a comedian? Are they always expecting you to be funny? Does that get annoying?
For me, when people find out I'm a comedian, it kind of catches them off guard, because when I'm not on stage, when I'm kind of in my normal daily routine life and not on stage, I'm actually, believe it or not, kind of a shy, quiet guy.
You know, we've talked to a number of people who are actors, and not that this is necessarily the same thing, but people who are in the sex industry and do stuff in front of camera. They all say the same thing, that they're actually pretty shy in their private lives.
Exactly. When I first decided to do this and actually pursue it more, a lot of people went up to my wife and said, really? He's going to go on stage? He comes here for these dinner parties and he barely says a word.
Was that discouraging to you, or did you just kind of like, yeah, I figured that was going to happen?
I get it. You know, I always try to separate my day job from my night job. Being a mortician, running my own funeral home, I don't tell people that I'm a comedian, especially the families that I serve. Some of them have found out, and they're really supportive of it. But, you know, my night job, it's kind of a character that I do on stage. A lot of the things I talk about, it's different from who I really am personally.
Have you ever, during one of those instances where you're dealing with a family, and you read it out, have you ever tried to, like, crack a joke with them and try to maybe ease the moment or anything, or do you just stay away from that entirely?
It's, you know, meeting with a family, making funeral arrangements, it's almost kind of like doing stand-up comedy in the fact that you have to read your audience. And so when I'm meeting with a family, I'm very professional, and I offer my condolences, and I ask questions, and I answer questions, and I kind of feel them out a little bit. Sometimes they initiate it by starting with a joke and saying something funny about what their loved one did or what their views on death is, and sometimes the manner of death is really tragic, and they're just kind of like really sad and just really lost. And so I kind of am empathetic and sympathetic, and I help them guide them. Sometimes their loved one has been ill for a long time, so it's expecting, and they're not in pain anymore, so they're kind of relieved a little bit. So I kind of read the families a little bit too, and sometimes I, you know, kind of make them chuckle a little bit without going into too much detail or stories and stuff. But I kind of have a good sense of when to break the ice and when not to.
In all your years as a mortician, what is one of the things that kind of stands out to you, a story that stands out to you?
I would have to say several years ago, I worked for a corporately owned funeral home in a really bad part of Sacramento. I mean, it was so bad that in the cemetery behind the funeral home, drug dealers and prostitutes were doing their business. We'd walk out to do through the cemetery and find needles in the cemetery. But we also did a ton of gang funerals. And once we did a gang funeral, and whenever we do gang funerals, we always get the calls from the police department saying that they're going to have undercover people at the service. They're going to be at the RV place across the street taking photographs. And so we kind of always know that they're there. And I think that's probably the oddest thing is the gang funerals that we did. You wouldn't know that they were cops because they looked just like the gang members.
I would imagine the mortician industry, the funeral industry, is kind of recession-proof.
We're at the point now where the baby boomers were starting to die off a little bit. So there is a kind of a higher death rate now than there was, so say, like 20 years ago. But it's, you know, and honestly, Nick, it's kind of competitive. There's a lot of low-cost cremation providers popping out. And there's actually a lot of competition, believe it or not. And it's kind of, and between some cities, it's pretty cutthroat.
What is something about the industry that would surprise me?
Probably the cremation rate, how it's changed over the years. Back in here in California, in 1960, the cremation rate was 2%. Now it's almost 75%.
Why is that?
One of the reasons for the rise in the cremation rate was, I think it was 1999 when the Vatican changed its views on cremation and let the Catholics go ahead and be cremated. Another reason was 2008 when the economy tanked. When somebody died, they only want the best for their loved one. But when the economy tanked and the real estate market went upside down, people lost their jobs. When mom or dad died, they were left with the financial burden on their kids, and their kids were the ones that were affected by the economy. And even though they wanted the best for mom, they didn't have any money, and cremation was the most affordable option at that time. Still kind of is.
I remember I'm a news reporter by day, and I remember doing stories about people selling funeral pots to make money.
Yeah. You can go on Craigslist right now, and I bet you can find funeral pots for sale.
I always hear a lot of comedians talk about how they feel like the political correct culture is kind of ruining some aspects of that. Do you ever kind of not tell a joke because you're worried that somebody might get offended, or do you think that that's what comedians are so supposed to do?
I think a lot of comedians, not me because I kind of have a specific theme that I adhere to, but I know a lot of comedians that try to kind of push the envelope and tell stories and try to see just how far to the edge they could push it without going over. A lot of them, you know, think that they're protected by free speech, and I guess in a way that they are. But, you know, like you said, it's a PC culture, and yeah, you can talk about politics or religion or a whole bunch of different subjects. And are you going to offend somebody? Probably.
Do you feel like that's a bad thing that you could offend somebody, or do you think that people need to lighten up? I guess
a little bit of both. I do think people need to kind of sit back and lighten up a little bit and realize, hey, it's a comedian on stage and he's telling a joke.
Have you ever had somebody kind of heckle you or yell at you from the crowd?
I very rarely get heckled. It has happened a couple of times. Kind of funny that you mention it, because I was writing a joke and it kind of mentioned about me being Jewish and Hanukkah, and it had some kind of references to Jesus coming out of the tomb. And boy, it did not go well. It really did not go well. And I got some groans and some comments afterwards from people saying, wow, that was really pushing it.
What was the joke?
It was kind of like, I was talking about one of the reasons I converted to Judaism, because I didn't believe a lot of the fairy tales in the New Testament. See, I wasn't born Jewish, I converted. I didn't believe a lot of the stories in the New Testament, like Jesus turning water into wine, Jesus walking out of his tomb after being dead for 3 days. And I thought at one point, what did he do? Did he walk out of his tomb, walk up to the Four Seasons, put 3 nails on the cot counter and say, hey, can you put me up for the night? Hey, I like that joke. Nailed it. Boy. I thought it was funny when I wrote it, and I ran it by a couple of people. I tried it at an open mic, and they turned on me really fast.
They were going to rush the stage on you? Who's your favorite comedian? You have to pick one.
Only one?
Only one.
Easy. Jerry Seinfeld.
Okay. Who is, in your opinion, the least funny comedian other people think is funny? Like the person that you just don't get. Like, I just don't get why this person is such a whatever.
I would have to say, oh man, who do I just don't get that people think it's the cat's meow? I would have to say probably, I would say Bill Burr.
Yeah, he's kind of big right now though, isn't he?
He is really big, and he's got some great material and stuff, but sometimes I'll watch his stand-up, and it's like, don't really like this. And comedy is really subjective. I mean, there's comedians that people just love, and there's some people that comedians just, you know, they just don't like and don't get. It's just really hard.
Is there any kind of thing, and this is really the last question that I would have, that if people think you're going to be funny, you're going to be funny? Like, I feel like some big name comedians, you just expect them to be funny, so then everything they say is funnier.
I'd agree with that. I mean, I think a lot of people, if you're a comedian, they find out that you're a comedian, they kind of expect you to be on all the time.
Yeah, I would think that kind of gets exhausting after a while.
It does. When we're not performing and we're just kind of being ourselves, we just kind of like to chill a little bit.
Last question that I have is, does your immediate family think you're funny?
My son, no. But my other family members, my wife goes to all my performances and open mics with me. One of my sisters goes to a lot of my shows, and she loves my material and brings her friends with me too. My brother and my other sister, they've gone to a few shows, and they'll probably agree that I'm the funniest one in the family.
I want to thank Morty the Mortician so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, find out where he's going to be doing different shows, we have linked to him on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Now let's go ahead and give John Scholl a call. Remember that if you were with us for our first episodes, he would always pretend like he was Domino's or some other kind of fast food place. That's really fallen off. But I feel like he's about to start trying to bring it back.
There he is.
How come you don't do the pretending to be a restaurant anymore?
Well, Captain D's, my official, unofficial sponsor, doesn't like when I promote other restaurants.
But why couldn't you then just pretend to be Captain D's?
That's part of the contract. I'm not allowed to mock them or make fun of them. or act like I have really any affiliation with them at all.
So really your sponsorship is kind of they sponsor you not to talk about them?
That's exactly what my one of my many agents told me was going to happen. So apparently it happens, you know, it's all like the rookies in the business. So yeah, apparently it's the new thing in Hollywood or whatever show business you want to call it, to where companies actually pay you not to talk about them.
Seems like not a great business plan, but look, who am I to question Captain D's?
I don't know if you know this, but you're talking to a yo-yo expert here. I've had a lot of traction on that video. I think I'm up to like 3,000 total views.
You know, that's really interesting that you would talk about the yo-yo thing, because I showed our professional, the world champion yo-yo competitor, your yo-yo video. This is what he had to say about it.
Yes. So he's getting a little cocky there.
That's what I thought too.
Looks like he's going for it. Oh, the Ferris. Oh, he's just swinging it around. Yeah, you know. I really think he could add some music to his performance here and just kind of jam out. Because it looks like the yo-yo skills are a bit lacking. It looks like he kind of maybe just picked it up day of. So maybe he could kind of make up for that with like some style points. But, you know, he's on his way. If he commits to it, I think he could do some good things.
Is that really even a trick? Because it looks to me like he just swung it around.
No, he's definitely just swinging it around. But I mean, I think, you know, he was doing around the world. He just needs to get it spinning.
So basically the yo-yo, the professional yo-yo competitor says that you have no idea what you're doing and that you just swung the yo-yo around. So the yo-yo video that you made everybody wait more than a month for, basically it came out to be nothing. How do you respond to that?
Listen, Montgomery Gentry or whatever his name is. I feel like that's a challenge.
First of all, Montgomery Gentry is an old country band. Second of all, there's no reason that he would challenge you. He clearly dominates you.
Let's do it. Let's, you know, I admit my skills may have been a little rusty, but if he wants the Ferris wheel, well, I'll show him the Ferris wheel again.
It's not even a trick. It's just you swinging it around.
I am making a public challenge to Montgomery Gentry over there to a yo-yo off.
He's already won. It's not even like a competition. Why would he accept that?
Because, you know, even Rudy had his day.
I feel like that story's not really true.
Actually, getting off on that, I have heard the same thing. I've actually met Rudy, and he was a rude son of a bitch.
Well, how so?
I was in college, and he was at a he was doing a book signing, and nobody was waiting for him, so I just walked up, and I'm like, "Man, you're Rudy Rudiger," and he basically was like, "Hey, you want an autograph? $20."
Whoa!
And I was like, "No, I told him I wasn't interested in getting an autograph. I just wanted to, you know, say hello and tell him that, you know, I was an admirer of his story and blah blah blah, and basically wanted nothing to do with talking about anything. He just wanted to make a buck. So I understand that, but at the same point, it's like, you know, who are you?
If you just had one thing that you were known for, would you embrace that one thing, or would you be kind of sick of it?
You know, everyone would say they'll embrace it, but look at everybody that is literally only famous for one thing, whether it's good or bad, and like it eats their entire life.
Yeah, I think it would get pretty annoying. But then at the same time, like, you'll see people at different, let's say, comic book conventions or something like that. They seem to hate it, but they're also trying to make money off of it. Like, they won't let it go either. Listen.
Can we just jump into the Fast Five real fast?
No, I have some important questions to get to ask you first.
Man, I'm so excited. Okay, all right.
Number one, how do you want to die?
That is quite the question. Well, I've always said that I would rather, and I think everyone would agree that you would rather go out painless, right?
I don't know. I think I'd kind of want to go out. I'd secretly like to be eaten by a bear or some kind of a crazy story like that.
Like, that sounds horrific. That does not sound like a way I'd want to go out.
See, but for me, this is the way that I look at it. Like, you basically only have four or five real accomplishments in life. You're born, you get married, you have a kid, you buy a house, and you die. Like, death is the last thing that you're ever going to do. Why not go out in kind of like a blaze of glory and really experience death? That way, whatever happens next, like if you're just sitting around a table talking to all your other dead friends, you've got a good story. Like, oh, I didn't die on the toilet, or I didn't have a heart attack and collapse in an airport bathroom. Like, I want to know about the guy who got eaten by a bear.
I mean, if you're going that, I mean, of course, you're all sitting around the poker table wherever you are after you're dead and you're swapping stories. I mean, that is a pretty badass story. I guess, I mean, if I'm going to have a choice, it's like I just jump from a freeway overpass and get crushed by a semi-truck or something.
See, that's I'm interested in that guy. Like, whoa, like, man, what was that like? Well, if you do that, and listen, we're not encouraging anybody to do this, but if you do that while falling, will you say, so far, so good?
The question is pretty morbid, but I also think it's a question that several people, you know, people have to face. And it's a frequent question. I mean, I don't think it's something that's not worth talking about.
How often do you think about death? Your specifically your own death.
Well, I mean, listen, I can literally fill each artery as it clogs. So I'm probably not too far away. And as one of our fellow listeners pointed out, and this is credit to you, Nick, you almost made one of our listeners get into a car accident a week and a half ago because of a joke that you said on one of the podcasts, asking me how many pounds would I say I was away from being able to wear shorts permanently. I think, like, you and I were both 30s, you know, I don't think we think about it, you know. I think you go through cycles of your life to where it's more prevalent or prevalent, and I don't, you know, I don't ever think about it right now.
See, I think about my own death every day.
I don't. I don't even remember the last time I thought about it. I was worried about it. I mean, it doesn't really cross my mind.
I guess I always think about it. At least once a day, the thought of my own death crosses my mind. Now I feel like I'm probably alone on that one.
Is there a reason why it crosses your mind?
I would say just because I think no matter how much I would like to believe that there is something else, I think you get one shot at this, and when you're dead, you're dead.
Well, unless you're NASA and you pick up that radio signal. Did you see that story?
What are you talking about? What does that have to do with dying?
Story that came out this past week regarding...
Are you trying to segue into your Fast Five?
No. You're talking about, you know, the other side, and then NASA picked up, like, from, like, 60 billion light years away, like, six radio signals that were all the same. That were, like, sent back to back to back to back. And that's the first time in recorded history that they've ever picked up, like, that strong of a radio signal or radio frequency where some, you know, something's being sent back to back to back to back.
See, my problem with any of those kind of things is I feel like either they've just made a huge discovery or somebody in the next room left the microwave on too long and screwed with all the equipment.
Like, I don't put it past anything, any agency, any job. Like, we all make mistakes. Just because you're NASA doesn't mean that someone, wasn't microwaving a burrito down the hall and it fucked with your whole system.
Because that's really the old, like, keep it simple, stupid. That's probably the more realistic explanation is either we've detected life from another universe or Greg from accounting accidentally flipped the microwave on at the wrong time.
Here's the million-dollar question is, what kind of bear would it be?
Oh, grizzly bear. I'm going to go top three. I would go, if I'm going to get mauled by a bear, I'm going to go grizzly bear number one, polar bear number two, and then I'm going to go like a young black bear because I think that I could maybe fight it off for a decent amount of time, long enough to say that I put up a good fight.
See, I would rather, like, to make it just a true news story, like, give me like a koala bear. Like, have me, you know, like if we're going for absurd, like, have me walk through the streets of Detroit and, like, get attacked by a panda and just get mauled in front of a group of onlookers.
Did you know that the Siafu ant is known for its large marching columns, which can number as many as 50 million ants in that marching column? They're so big, they can actually be a menace to people.
50 million ants all at once? That sounds like something nightmares are made of.
This is the most impressive animal, random animal facts animal we've ever had. Like, I was looking at this like, holy shit. Most ants in the colony are sterile, but when they encounter a fertile male, they tear off its wings, bring him back to the queen, which then uses him to lay as many as a million eggs in a month.
Wow. That guy's having a good month, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think after the first month, though, he's fucking exhausted.
She probably eats him.
Yeah, I think she does, actually. I'm pretty sure she kills him.
John's Fast Five.
Pew, 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 pew.
John's Fast Five.
Pew, 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 pew.
John's Fast Five.
My turn! My turn!
In a second. Wait.
This isn't going to work while he's awake. You know that, right?
Are you ready for your Fast Five that you're apparently really pumped about?
This is probably the easily the most talkable and conversational Fast Five I've ever had.
Oh, he's building it up. Let's hear it.
What are your thoughts on macaroni and cheese?
It's fucking delicious, and I would definitely buy a 97-pound, at least 97 pounds of it.
Well, Costco is selling a 27-pound tub of it, which sounds disgusting. And what's even more disgusting is all the shit they've probably put in it, because apparently it has a shelf life of 20 years.
That's fuck. Like, listen, I know that some people get upset about the whole organic and the hormones and stuff like that. If you have something that's going to last food-wise for 20 years, shit, man. I mean, that's just, you're just, you might as well just go under the kitchen, mix a bunch of chemicals together, and eat that.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of fucked. But hey, you know what? You can get it for the lofty price of $89.99. So
I don't know if that's a good deal or not. How much is that a pound? That's $3 a pound for mac and cheese. I don't think that's a great deal.
Listen, I have 7 boxes of Kraft right now that probably equal a pound, and it's just as good. I guarantee it.
Will you eat mac and cheese just by itself? Like, what am I having for dinner? I'm having straight mac and cheese, or do you have to have a side?
I mean, I don't remember the last time I just had mac and cheese by itself. So I usually make it with, you know, chicken or brisket or something like that.
First of all, you make mac and cheese with hot dogs. That's the only acceptable way to eat mac and cheese.
When you're 7. And you don't even say mac and cheese right. You say it like all blocky, mac and cheese.
How do you say it?
It's mac and cheese. It's not like mac and cheese.
It's mac and cheese.
No, it's mac and cheese.
I don't hear the difference.
Well, maybe our listeners can decipher it for us. But it's not mac and cheese. It's mac and cheese.
Oh, you're combining the mac, the C at the end and the A and the and? Like mac and cheese?
Mac and cheese, yeah. Not mac and cheese.
That's a good point. Okay. Well, we'll find out what the real answer is. I'm siding with you. I feel like it's mac and cheese.
So then that leads me to another controversial topic. Have you seen the movie Bird Box?
No. Once something gets really, really popular, I refuse to participate in it.
Or is it just because you think it's scary?
Scary.
I haven't seen it either, but I apparently, the premise of it is Sandra Bullock's in it and...
Sandra Bullock, not Bullock.
Bullock. That's why I said Bullock.
No, you said Bullock. It's Bullock.
Listen, you're only going at me because I called you out on your mac and cheese comment.
Well, look, if we're going to be chromatic... never mind. Just keep going.
Got him. The premise of the movie is they're kidnapped or something, or they're blindfolded and they have to do stuff blindfolded. Anyways, these idiot kids that, you know, we're so happy to call are now blindfolding themselves and doing regular things, and they're calling it the blindfold challenge or the Bird Box challenge.
See, I think I think that this is the younger generation secretly fucking with us. Like, I think that they are, like, the Tide Pod Challenge and stuff. I think that they're trolling us with this kind of stuff. And, like, watch, I'm going to do this stupid thing and convince these older people that I'm actually serious about it. I think they're trolling us.
The Tide Pod Challenge, which is fucking absurd, isn't even the dumbest thing I've seen. I think the dumbest challenge I've seen recently are the idiots that douse themselves in, like, lighter fluid and light themselves on fire.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid. I haven't seen that one. I don't know what websites you're going on.
Oh, man. Well, anyways, so my point in that being there was a kid in Utah that blindfolded himself and attempted to drive a certain distance. Well, you imagine how that turned out. He ended up crashing into another car.
Shocker. Can't believe it.
Just people are dumb. I don't get it. Like, you know, now they're saying that, you know, Bird Box, the movie, is to blame because it's putting all these thoughts into people's or kids' minds. You know, it's no accountability anymore. Which state has the most shoreline in the contiguous United States?
I'm not going to get into the contiguous. I feel like that's somehow incorrect, but
I think so too. I wrote the word down and I know what it is, but I think I spelled it wrong.
I would think it's continuous, not contiguous.
I'm not really sure. I think it's contiguous or contiguous. I don't know. I can't read what I wrote, so I fucked it up, I think.
This makes me question your whole mac and cheese thing.
Listen, answer the question.
I feel like it's, I'm going to go out of the box and say Michigan.
Oh, you're so good. Of course you would say Michigan, which is correct, by the way.
Well, I mean, the Great Lakes, and you guys have got all those weird little fucking features up there.
We're second to Alaska. Alaska has the most shoreline.
But that seemed too obvious to me. That's why I didn't go with Alaska.
Yeah.
I don't think
they're part of Russia anyway, so they don't really count as a state.
Shout out to Vermont, by the way. They've actually a couple of people who listen to us in Vermont.
The rest of the Fast Five is all football related because I had to bring this up about the video that I tweeted out about the fans doing the field goal challenge, and the one guy just completely misses it and just kicks the ball right into the dick of, like, one of the workers. Might be one of the funniest videos I've ever seen.
You really can't go wrong with a nut shot video. You just can't.
I mean, so after I sent that to you and you told me that, I literally YouTube searched good nut shots and watched videos pertaining to that for probably a good 20 minutes.
How do you feel about when people recommend or tell you to watch a video and they want to, like, show it to you on your phone or call you over to their computer? How do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm indifferent. I mean, you know, if you want to take the time to find it or show me it, I mean, I'll watch it. I mean, I think it all goes into who it is that's showing it. Like, I immediately know by who's asking me, like, what it's going to be and if I'm actually going to enjoy it.
See, I don't like it. When somebody's ever like, let me show you this video, I just have an immediate internal groan because I know they're not going to just show me one. Then they're going to have to show me all 40 of them that they want to watch. And I can't stand it. I hate it when somebody says it to me.
And then I want to get your take on this. During the Patriots game, Patriots playoff game against the Chargers this past Sunday, the NFL, they have a woman official. Her name's Sarah Thomas. And she officiated the first NFL playoff game for a woman.
Look, I got no issue with it. I mean, if you can do the job, then who gives a shit?
I don't care if she's a woman, a Martian, a polar bear. Like, if you can do a good job, I just imagine, like, her. Like, imagine all the trials she's gone through just to get there. Like, she's probably a hard ass.
And I can see some people who would make the argument, well, you didn't play the game. But you don't need to play the game to officiate it. You just need to know the rules.
Well, I mean, listen, I played the game, and now I can't walk. I'm 50 pounds overweight, and my yo-yo video only has 3,000 views.
Where's the picture of your feet? You were supposed to send a picture of your feet.
I got nothing on that. I'm not entirely sure I want, like, you know, everything about this is public. I'm not entirely sure I want a picture of my feet just float, like foot just floating around.
How would you feel if somebody was like getting it to a picture of your feet?
That I mean, I guess more power to you. I guess. I mean, I'm never gonna know. I think it would be more weird, like if someone sent me a like a picture or video that's like, hey, nice feet. And I don't know why it would be a man automatically, but that's how I envision it.
Why do I feel like you have been caught by your wife many times and knocked over your computer in each case?
Let's just move on. Our top five.
We're on to the top five. And so these are the top five things that you are forced to lie to your significant other about.
Can we just get number one out of the way? Because I feel like number one is glaring.
No, see, mine is a little bit different. Let's go 5-1.
All right, so I'll start. Number five is finances.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid one. Wait, do you lie though and say that you have more or less than you actually have, or both?
I think this happens more early on in a relationship when you're not necessarily sharing bank accounts and things like that. But I feel that more or less, you always lie pretending to have more.
See, I think that once you get married, though, that you kind of pretend like you have less so that as much doesn't get spent.
So she just doesn't come up to you and just think that she can spend $3,000 on closets or something?
Yeah, I try to pitch it low. Like, credit card bill a little high this month. Gotta get that down.
Well, you're a brave man for even attempting, the credit talk. But what do you got for number five?
Washing the dishes. My wife forces me to lie to her about whether or not I've pre-rinsed it before I put it in the dishwasher.
that's a good one, actually. That can be a good argument starter. Anything that involves dishes.
Yeah, I just don't understand the point. Why am I fucking washing it before I'm washing it?
I've never understood that either. And if you watch or read any of the advertisements, as always, you know, this has 10,000 pressure and jet streams that'll make El Nino look like a pussy, and then it doesn't do anything.
Nope, it's all the same.
I have this just because... I think this is like guy code. So this is strictly from, this could be from a girl's point of view. Either way, not saying anything about a bachelor or bachelorette party.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one too.
Like you just gotta lie straight up. Like I don't care what happens, and anyone that listens to this will agree. Like what happens at those kind of events stays at those kind of events.
Yeah. And I don't want to know what is going on at a bachelorette party. It's not in the same vein as the bachelor party. But I can also, for all three of our female listeners, tell you that whatever you think is probably... What are you doing?
What am I doing?
You're breathing into the phone again.
Damn it. I was reading.
What are you reading? You fucking reading War and Peace? Flipping through pages left and right? What are you doing?
No, I was reading my list to make sure that I had something right.
What? Anyway, moving on. I know you just did that on purpose, too.
Yeah, I did the last one on purpose. I'm a mouth breather. Leave me alone.
For our three female listeners, whatever you think is happening at a bachelor party, trust me, it's not. Nobody is having these wild things. Everybody passes out early, and no one gets laid.
I mean, yes, Nick, you are correct.
My number four is not very good now that I look at it. It's what my son ate for lunch or dinner, because I basically just give him ice cream and Cheeto Puffs, and then she's got to ask me what I gave him, and I've got to say, oh, these organic waffles.
Oh man, well, I mean, I'm not there yet, but like I already get the questions asked to like, so how many ounces did she get today? How many times did you feed her? And it's always a lie. Always.
Yeah, I know. Why do they make us do it? Like, you're making me lie to you. You know I'm just going to lie to you.
Like, you don't trust me to do daily, like, activities, and you're entrusting me to make sure that our child gets proper nutrition. Like, that's a joke. That's on you. At that point, it's not on me. It's on you for thinking, like, I'm going to take care of her the proper way.
Preach. What's your number four?
Preach, brother. I'm on number three now.
Oh, sorry. What's your number three?
Telling her she looks pretty when she doesn't.
Oh, God.
I say this more or less, and listen, this goes out to all the guys in the world. When you have a pregnant wife, and she's busting at the seams, and her hormones are going crazy, and she looks at you with that crazy look in her eyes, she's like, do I look pretty? every fucking guy in the world lies. I don't care what you say. Like, yes, it's beautiful because she's carrying your child and blah, 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 but it's like, deep down, you want to say, like, well, you probably looked a little better.
Look, but here's the thing. She could say the same thing about us.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, well, my wife does, actually. My wife was just talking about, like, she's like, we were reminiscing on our relationship, and she's like, you know, talking about times from 5-6 years ago and this and that, and how my knees didn't crack, and how, you know, I could fit into Schmedium t-shirts, and, you know, that was a fun conversation.
My wife, though, recently has been like, I thought you were working out recently. Doesn't look like it. My number three is what time I'm going to be home.
See, I actually don't lie about that because I appreciate punctuality. What if I was having dinner ready at 7?
That's an early time to eat. I mean, I don't think anybody eats that early.
At 7 p.m.?
Yeah, who eats at 7 p.m. under the age of 75?
I'm so confused. Dinner is supposed to be between 5 and 6.
This to me pisses me off. You know what time breakfast is? Breakfast, no matter, is any time. It's the first meal you eat. So if you eat at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that's fucking breakfast. Whatever time you eat dinner, is the last meal of the day is dinner, no matter what time you eat it.
Well, unless you're me, and then you have a couple of late-night snacks, you know. Like, I scour the we're trying this new diet.
Bullshit. Yeah. Let me and go. I can tell you now how that ends.
Oh, well, I can tell you how it's going to turn out. I can't see it now. I'm definitely not going to be able to see it in 6 weeks. But I'm like a ravager, man. I'm scouring the fridge for anything. And I ended up settling on olives. Fucking olives. Like a maniac with like a replay of SportsCenter at like 3 a.m. And I'm eating fucking olives.
Were you going green olives or you going black olives?
It was the queen green, they call them.
Oh my God, dude, that's really desperate. You went black olives. I wouldn't have said it was that desperate.
See, I don't like really black olives. Black olives, which I guess doesn't really make any sense because I like green olives, and they're technically kind of the same thing.
See, I'm the exact opposite. I don't like green olives. I like black olives.
You know what's funny? This actually plays into my number two perfectly.
Okay.
Which is when you're making them dinner and they're on a diet and you tell them that you're making them like the healthy version when you really don't.
Oh, you're lying about the food quality?
What's your number two?
It's already been discussed. Essentially how she looks is my number two. My wife does a hair thing. She's always switching the hair around. And there's been some times when she's come back and I've been like, oh, that's...
I'm not laughing, I swear.
That's different. It's a different look you're going for.
One thing I grotesque are painted fingernails.
Detest, not grotesque. Detest.
When me and my wife got together, like I had to, you know, take the fifth every time she did it, and eventually I finally just told her, like, you know, why are you painting your fingernails? You look like a fucking clown.
Wait a minute, you're mad just over, wait, are they extravagantly painted or are they just like one color?
No, it's not that I got mad, like I don't like it. I don't know why, but like it just bothers me because like they get chipped or like, you know, like they're not put on properly. I don't know, like don't paint yourself at all. You know what I mean? Like, I can't stand painted fingernails. I don't understand why.
Really? That's interesting. Maybe it's because you have foot jealousy. What I'm telling you is that you're secretly proud of the feet that you have claimed are great feet, but you refuse to show a picture. And if anybody else threatens you, whether they're feet or their hand nails, fingernails, you're threatened by it.
Like, I dread the fact when my daughter is going to be like, oh, daddy, let me paint your toenails and fingernails. I'm going to have to be like, how about you go do it to somebody else? Anyways, my number one, which I believe should be the universal number one, is lying about your past partners.
See, I've never done that. We have never, both of us completely avoid the conversation. We both were born into this world never having met anyone else before this.
I mean, listen, that's fine if that's the way you want to do it. I'm not going to judge or say anything. I mean, that's perfectly fine. I feel to be able to understand somebody, you know, you should know, you know, their past and where they come from and their experiences.
Yeah, but I don't think you need to know a lot of details. I don't think you need to, like, look, the idea that you've had boyfriends or girlfriends in the past is enough for me. I don't need to know who they were, their names, their pictures, anything.
Then the first initial thought is you start asking yourself questions, right? Like, oh, is that person going to pop back up? And, oh, well, that guy had a six-pack. I don't have a six-pack. What the fuck did he do wrong? Or that guy's an oil tycoon. You know, it's like, not that that's anything from experience, by the way. I was just throwing random things out there.
No. I was really interested in some follow-up questions. If your wife's previous boyfriend was an oil tycoon.
You know, when you first get together, I feel like that's always one of the things, whether people want to admit it or not, that you think about is, you know, like, how do I bring up this question? Or, you know, how do I start, you know, talking about this or asking this?
Yeah, I would actually, I think that my number one probably really is the same as your number one. Mine is who I was talking to. Like, I can't, even if it's somebody from work or a friend that I've known for years, I cannot infer in any way that it is a woman. Like, I have to say, I was talking to this person. She sees right through it.
Well, that's because she's a smart woman. I mean, you know, the dumbest thing, I think, and I don't know when it was popular, but it was to do, you know, you talk to each other and you go, well, just tell me your number. Most people don't remember their number, so you lie anyways.
Yeah, I would say that. People are probably going to lie about that. See, now here's the final thing. Do you actually lie? Because for me, I will get really close to lying to her, but not actually do it.
I mean, you know, you withhold the truth, right? Like, you don't tell her the whole story, and I say two, right? Like, lying. Because anyone who knows me knows that I'm a professional virgin anyways, but...
Do you realize how stupid us two married men are for bringing up this conversation, which our wives will listen to? We really fucked this up.
I mean, you're the one who wanted to do this top five.
I didn't realize until we started talking about it how dumb of an idea it was for us to do this.
Well, I guess we're never going to be able to to lie to our spouses ever again. Not that I really ever have.
Not that I ever have either. That's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We're on social media, Profoundly Pointless, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have ProfoundlyPointless.com. We love to hear from you guys. And we've also started putting up some of the interview sections up on YouTube. So if you want to see what some of these people look like, head over to our YouTube channel. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be trying out some new stuff, I think, because we're getting more and more listener comments, and we want to start featuring you guys on the show, and we've got some really interesting guests lined up as well.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.